right. Welcome to the Fundraising Freedom Podcast with Mary Valone. I'm your host, Mary Valone, and this is the place where aspiring six and seven figure fundraisers come to be encouraged, empowered, and educated on how to raise more funds and have more freedom. So today I have the honor of having a special guest on the show. We are on episode 123, and we're talking philanthropic giving with my guest, Arlene Kogan. So Arlene is a sought-after speaker, trainer, and coach on leadership and philanthropy. She's a certified financial planner and expert on philanthropy. Arlene provides a fresh perspective on how to include philanthropy into your life. Her passion is reflected in her inspiring and informative presentations that break giving down into manageable bites and explains how you can make giving make a gift you never imagined. So Arlene began her career on Wall Street. She spent 20 years in the trust and investment world. Wanting to lead by example for her daughter, she transitioned into the nonprofit development space, helping to guide the ninth largest community foundation in the country for almost a decade. So Arlene is a number one Amazon best-selling author of the book Give to Live, Making a Charitable Gift You Never Imagined. And she lives in Portland, Oregon, with her husband and her boxer. I have a boxer. Well, had one boxer. So, well, welcome to the show, Arlene. So great to have you here.
Mary, it is delightful to be here. And I'm so glad you have boxers. Yeah. Just as a side note, my husband's had them for like five generations. Oh. So I joke around that it was my prenuptial agreement that we would have boxers. We really don't have a prenuptial.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, we now are in the Dalmatian space, but we our very first baby was a boxer. So I love them. But yeah, well, you have such a wide variety of just wisdom when it comes into the giving space. And so it's really such a joy to have you on the show and to have you talk about just philanthropic giving. And, you know, what nonprofit doesn't want more philanthropic givers on their donor list, right?
Yeah, and not only do they want more philanthropic givers, they want the right philanthropic givers who are passionate about their cause and really support them wholeheartedly.
Absolutely. Yeah. So fill in the gaps on your bio and your background with in the nonprofit space and how you know your passion for the work that you do.
Oh, thank you, Mary. Again, it's a delight to be here and share my story with you. You know, I am a certified financial planner by training and still am one and keep the license active. And I started off on Wall Street and I worked for all the big banks, Citibank, U.S. Trust in New York, and I helped people get rich and make a lot of money and preserve their wealth. After having two daughters, all of a sudden, I noticed, or it became more apparent, the glass ceiling, sexual harassment, wage discrimination, and I didn't want my daughters to have to deal with that BS. So my husband and I, as a choice, decided to move from the East Coast to the West Coast, if that's when we moved to Portland, Oregon, about 20 years ago. And what happened was, I saw a career coach because I didn't want to go back into that big banking corporate America again. When I saw the career coach, everything came up, philanthropy and benevolence. And I was stunned. I had been on Wall Street. But what it allowed me to do was to focus and find an opportunity to take all my skills as a financial planner into the nonprofit and arena. And as you mentioned, I worked for the ninth largest community foundation in the country, which happens to be the Oregon Community Foundation. And there, I was really able to help people on a different level. Instead of just solving money problems, I was able to help people find their purpose and meaning through giving. I was able to help them self-actualize. And there is nothing more rewarding than helping someone make a charitable gift they never imagined, to see the joy on their face. It was the most extraordinary thing when I was at the Community Foundation, I focused solely on professional advisors. There's estate planning attorneys, CPAs, wealth managers, because if you get one advisor that knows, like, and trusts your organization, they refer all of their clients to you. So I was raising 30 to 40% of all the giving statewide.
Wow.
Yeah. And when I was there, it was a dream job. It was a dream job. But I did notice that there was a missing element. Having been on the trust and investment side, I noticed that many people, while their advisors were good at educating them, they never really spent the time to break giving down so they could understand, they could solve a family problem or situation, solve a personal problem with a financially good outcome that also allowed them to make a charitable gift. So they could have the trifecta. It didn't have to be just personal and tax. It could be for personal, tax, as well as a legacy they never imagined. And that's why I went out on my own about 3 years ago and wrote my book to really help people understand how they could give and solve problems and have it be good for their family, their finances, and the community at large.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, and I love that you are kind of on the opposite end of the nonprofit work maybe that I do, where it's like you get to work specifically with those philanthropic givers, you know, to help them, you know, see that here is the trifecta of how you can make a difference. You know, I often, you know, work with people who are, just don't even understand why somebody would want to give. Like, I mean, it seems silly. I mean, we all want to spend money, right? Like, that's the fun part about making money is spending it. But just coming from your perspective and just your years of experience working with very wealthy and philanthropic donors, why is philanthropic so, you know, philanthropic giving so important to somebody on the other end? Why did they want to give so much to these causes that you've been working with in the past?
You know, people give to causes for so many different reasons. Some of the best reasons people give is because they overcame something they never imagined in terms of education. Education was able to set them on a course that they never thought they could achieve their dreams. So a lot of people like to give to education. Mm-hmm. And other reasons people give, especially those wealthy people, many of them are business owners, because giving is good for their business. You're involved in the community. You're out there and people see that you care about the little league or the local football team. Whatever it is, you're out there, people see you make a difference and it's noticeable, and that helps support your business because people will help you because you're helping the community. And the third thing about giving is there actually hard science about giving. When you give money away, it stimulates your prefrontal cortex of your brain. And for those of you who aren't familiar with your prefrontal cortex, that's the same area that gets stimulated with great food and great sex. So it's just like having a good meal. When you give money away to others, your brain is lighting up. There's physical things happening in your body that show joy and happiness.
Wow. Well, and it is so true that when we can give to something that we believe in, it is such a win on our end. And I think that, you know, when you're working for a charity, working for that nonprofit, sometimes it feels like you're taking something from someone else. And so, you know, speaking to that person, what would you tell them if they're afraid that they're taking something away from one of these givers?
Well, you know, let's talk about it in terms of science again. Are you familiar with Abraham Maslow?
Yes.
Abraham Maslow came out with the hierarchy of needs. And at the top of the hierarchy of needs is self-actualization. And self-actualization is really where people find purpose and meaning in their life. It's something bigger than themselves. Now, as a fundraiser, Abraham Maslow passed away, but in 1990, they added three more levels to his hierarchy. It was originally five, and then they added three more, making it eight. And over self-actualization is transcendence. And as fundraisers, we get to help people transcend. We help people self-actualize. We help them have the joy of giving. And that's really important, to be able to allow people to have that joy. So to any fundraiser who's kind of afraid to ask, just remember, you're helping people self-actualize, and that is the greatest thing. That is the greatest place that you can be in the world.
Yeah, so great. Well, and it is, it's like to be able to give those large gifts, and then for the work that you do, where you go in and, you know, actually have the ability to show how they can not just make an average gift, but how they can make like a really significant gift to a cause. I think that that's really beautiful, because I'm like, oh, who doesn't want that, really? So,
yeah. And on the other hand, I go back to my dad saying, you know, fundraising is like sales. And there's three simple steps. What's in it for your donor? So what's in it for the donor is self-actualization, joy. They can support a cause they care about. Do they know, like, and trust you? Which your organization needs to have the proper documentation in place, like gift acceptance policies, investment policies, actually show what you're doing. And then the last step of fundraising is you have to ask. If you don't ask, the answer is always no. Yeah. And if the answer is no, chances are your timing might be off. You just might want to wait and ask at a different time.
No, so good. Well, and you know, because you do work with so many nonprofits, what are you seeing that nonprofits, like, what are you seeing that they're doing really well to attract these kinds of people into their causes?
Well, I know that nonprofits are passionate about their work, and they're doing amazing things. And when I go meet with executive directors and staff, my heart opens up, and you know, I want to give to them all. It's really, really hard to choose. So that passion and what they're doing to help the community is always very prevalent with nonprofits, and it's great. That's really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, when that happens, are you seeing that they just are really great storytellers, that they're, you know, opening up their doors? What is it that you're seeing that they're actually, like, that they say or that they do that has moved you in some way?
Well, the best ones, I think, are excellent storytellers. And storytelling, not necessarily just face-to-face verbally, but they are getting out there in terms of interviewing some of the recipients of their work and showing the actual impact it is having in the community. And by showing that impact, telling that story, whether it be on a video or, you know, there's so much social media out there, I'm not the best at it, but I see nonprofits are really starting to engage people that way. And I think that's very important, mm-hmm. because that's kind of the way of the future. You have to be able to touch people in all different venues.
Yeah. What do you think is holding people back as far as, you know, the donors that you work with or those who are giving? What do you think is holding them back from, like, taking it to the next level with an organization where you're able to come in and really, like, push things forward? What do you think is holding them back?
I think there are a couple things that hold them back. I think one of the biggest ones is that they don't necessarily see the leadership by the board of directors. There are, I think, way too many nonprofits who let their board off easy, and they're not requiring them to make a gift or raise that specific amount of money for the organization. leading by example from your board and executive staff, making those introductions to the larger donors so the board president or whoever it is can say, yes, I've given, join me. Mm-hmm. It's a very powerful statement. And donors love to know that all the board members are on board and have contributed wholeheartedly to the organization.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And, you know, it is true that nobody wants to go first when it comes to giving. They want to see that a lot of other people have already gone ahead of them. They're already seeing great results and that the organization is good, you know, at what they do. And so board of directors is always a challenge. I get a lot of questions about, you know, how do I work with my board? How do I get my board to actually, you know, fundraise and to, you know, give significantly? And so I do know that it's a challenge. One of the things that I teach through my book, Fundraising Freedom, is, you know, that I often teach about just empowering volunteers, empowering, you know, the community to step up. So if the board is so focused on your mission, how can you get some high-level donors, some people who care about your fundraising? And so a lot of success that I've seen in the past is really seeing these philanthropic givers step up in the area of doing exactly what you just said. When it comes to the people that, you know, that you have worked with in the past, do they enjoy volunteering? Do they enjoy serving in leadership in the organizations that you've worked with?
You know, it really varies. I think with the older folks, they come in as successful people mm-hmm. with more money to give. But I also think when we look at some of the younger generation millennials, they give completely differently and they want that hands-on experience first, volunteering, spending time before they start to raise the bar in their giving. So we really have to look generationally at who we want on their board and what to expect in terms of giving or any volunteer. Any volunteer, don't get me wrong, any volunteer person that you have in your organization, they are prime for leaving a substantial bequest to your organization. And that can be as easy as a beneficiary designation and a retirement account or a payable on death with a bank account. It's really simple to do. They don't have to pay a lawyer, but they're the perfect person to ask. You have volunteers for 2 years, 5 years. I know organizations that have volunteers that have been around 25 or 30 years. All of those people are potential major donors.
Yeah. Well, and it is. It's about moving them forward. And, you know, on last week's episode, I had had David Baker on. He works specifically with planned giving. And, you know, it is interesting how these smaller donations really are that, like, the crack of the door, you know, opening to say, hey, I'm interested in what you do. And it's our job in the nonprofit sector to really push that door open and to continue the conversation and to invite them to be a part of your cause. So what is it about being a certified, you know, planner that, you know, that you get to work with people with their finances, you know, the certified financial planner, what is it about that, that like really gets you excited?
Well, you know, it goes back to credibility. Do they know, like, and trust you? And having spent, you know, almost 20 years on Wall Street and just having that designation layers a whole different amount of understanding about someone's finances and how they can make a gift in an efficient and a tax-effective manner. It's, you know, I never imagined I'd be in nonprofit. And when that career coach told me philanthropy and benevolence, I had no idea my skills could literally go into the nonprofit fundraising, when in reality, there was an understanding of compassion, dealing with dysfunctional families or loss of loved ones that aligned closely. It's an amazing designation to have, and it's something that I will continue to have the rest of my life because it's that valuable.
Yeah. That's so great. Well, and it is, there's something just really special about being able to work in such a giving sector, you know, that everybody really wants to see each other succeed for the most part. So a really, really great industry. So tell us a little bit about your book, Give to Live. Why did you decide that you wanted to write?
Give to Live was born out of that 20 years in the trust and investment world and a decade in nonprofit, and having to repeat myself so many times on basic understanding about giving. And it's always been a gift of mine to break things down into bite-sized pieces so people can understand. For example, when I was in the trust and investment world, I explained diversification as fruit salad. Everyone knows what fruit salad is, right?
Sure.
And you could say that apples are large cap stocks and, you know, pears are emerging markets, and you can understand if there's a drought and or there's a real great crop, that having that a diversified bowl of fruit is better than just having apple salad where you have, you know, five different kinds of apples. So I really wanted the information available to everyone, so everyone knows they can make a charitable gift, not just the wealthy people. One example I have in my book really talks about, you know, the average person who may make a $100 gift to an organization. And how do you endow that gift in perpetuity? Like when you're gone, that $100 goes away. So I share a great example. Whatever that annual gift you make is, multiply it by 20. So in this case, it would be 100 times 20 is $2,000. And you can leave payable on death, a beneficiary designation, bequest in your will for $2,000 to that organization you support, and set it up to go into their endowment. And you have now endowed a gift for $100 to that organization that you never imagined you could make. And that's going to make a difference in that organization. And that $2,000 probably won't affect your family.
Yeah.
It's that simple. And when clients and donors understand it's that simple, and that giving isn't just for the super wealthy and mass affluent, there are a lot more people who feel that they can start giving. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ensure that people understood the basics of a donor advised fund and the benefits of that. And I did it through the lens of stories of amazing people I had the opportunity to work with who had a family situation. They didn't think they could make the gift, and ultimately they were able to solve that personal problem, have a financial benefit, and create a legacy. So the book walks you through everyday people with everyday issues who solved an issue using philanthropy. And then after each story, it provides a personal reflection, which allows you to start putting down your values, the organizations you care about, who do you want involved in the gift. So there's actually a workbook aspect of it. And in the end, the book points you back to your financial advisor. Because next to your spouse, the financial advisor is the next most powerful person as to whether that donor is going to make the gift or not. Mm. And far too many times, advisors will say you can't afford to because they don't understand. And that's why I want them pulled in here, having a conversation. Book is a great tool to hand donors. It's a great tool to hand clients because it really explains the basics that everyone said they can make a gift they never imagined.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's like, I think that we think that, oh, giving is for the wealthy, or that legacy giving, this, you know, putting somebody in your will or in your trust or any of those sorts of things, that, oh, that's for the wealthy. And you're flipping that on its head saying, no, it's actually for everyone, right?
It's for everyone, because everyone wants to have the joy of making a difference in some way. Philanthropy, love of humankind. Everyone wants to be making a difference.
Yeah. And so there are quite a few organizations that I work with where, you know, they tend to give a lot back to their own organizations. And sometimes I wonder if the organizations could ever survive without their own people, because their staff tend to be so supportive and financially giving. And I'm like, you know, in the end, it doesn't really matter where the funds come from, as long as the funds are coming in and that the donors are really excited about it. And so for everyone who's listening, you know, if you feel like, man, that's out of my range to even think about what I can do for my own organization or do for the organizations that I care about, what advice do you have for them as far as like, how can they just get started on the process?
And that is a great question. And like you, I mean, I think as a fundraiser, the first thing you should do is make a charitable gift, or write your organization into your estate plan in some way, because that commits you 100%. If you've made that gift and you're asking for money, you talk from power and strength and commitment. And that goes for any campaign you're on, any board member, co-chair. People need to step up, because there's strength when you've made your gift. You can 100% say, this is good work. Mm-hmm. And I'm thrilled to hear that you have organizations where everyone who's working there is giving.
Yeah,
I feel that should be for every organization.
But it is. It's like, it's not the norm. And, you know, especially when you work for maybe a more, you know, just a larger organization that feels like, oh my gosh, there's so many donors. I'm not even going to be a blip on the screen, you know, if I give, because I don't have that much money. But the thing is that we all know that a large amount of people who give a small amount goes a long ways. And it doesn't take a lot of big dollar donors. I mean, look at, you know, our political fundraising campaigns that are out there where it's grassroots and it's a lot of people who are giving. You know, the way that your organization or your cause is raising funds, it doesn't matter whether or not those funds are coming from a lot of people or a few, but just like you said with the fruit, you know, salad, that it's like you just want to make sure that it's diversified and that you have a lot of different people who are invested in the work that you're doing. So I love that. And thank you for putting that challenge out there, because I do think that it's important that we are invested and we do come from a different place of confidence. And, you know, I've given to the cause, so therefore with confidence, I can go and ask somebody else to give without feeling like, oh, like I'm asking them for something that I wouldn't even do. And
yeah. And I had a board I worked with once, and an organization, and I was talking to the head of development and the president and CEO, and we were talking about the requirement of board members to, you know, write or raise the money, give or get the money.
Yeah.
And the development person was, chief development officer, was all over that, and the president took a step back and said, well, I'm afraid if we do that, we'll be missing out on board members who might add an important perspective for the nonprofit. And I'm like, well, if they're not invested in the long-term goal, why is their perspective matter?
Right.
And they never did anything about it. for years, but just recently I actually heard that they're now requiring it, and it comes full circle. So we really need to lead by example, and that's not the same amount, you know, for one organization, a large hospital or university, who knows, that could be $100,000. For another organization, maybe it's $1,000. You have to tailor it to your organization to make it meaningful, but you have to have that commitment, because there's a disconnect with donors, if the board, and if senior staff are not giving to the organization.
You know, you're really hitting on something super important here, and that's, you know, just the fact that you only have so many board members for an organization. You only need three to actually have a board of directors, you know, to be a legit nonprofit, 501c3 nonprofit with a board. And you have three people. So if you can't get three people who are financially invested in the work that you're doing, then, you know, the thing is that those people should not be serving in your top leadership role, because what I teach is, you know, I like to look at the grading scale and say, you know, you want A plus volunteers serving on your board, because A plus volunteers will recruit A plus volunteers. But if you get B, C, D level volunteers, they're always going to recruit below them. So you will never get A plus volunteers off of B and C level volunteers. And you hit on it here too with the donor base, is that you're not going to get an A plus philanthropic giver off of a C and a D level board member.
Right.
They're going to smell you out.
Yeah. They're going to smell you out and go, well, you know, maybe there's another organization that does similar work that's a little bit more invested and passionate. So people look at those things, and sometimes they don't necessarily do all the due diligence and look real deep, but they get a sense of passion when they meet you.
Yeah.
When I worked for the Community Foundation, one of the key things when they were giving away money through the competitive grant process was the board commitment. Like, if your board isn't all in, then we can't give you money, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it makes sense. It's like, why should I be more invested than you are?
Yeah.
It's silly. It would be silly to ask that question, you know, ask them to give when your own people who should know, love, and trust you, you know, are not backing you, your organization financially. But that does take a lot of commitment from the leadership, though, to say, the bar is here, and we're not going to allow anything but the best to come through our doors. And, you know, I get it that sometimes you're just trying to survive, you're just trying to keep the doors open, but you're always going to be living in that place of lack and scarcity if you don't allow for there to be some expectations of what you have for your board and for your highest level volunteers. So really great. So I want to ask you before, as we wrap up here, you know, what is it that you would love every nonprofit to know about philanthropists? What would, you know, what could change things if they knew just a little bit more about philanthropists?
Philanthropists want to give. They really do. And it's yours to lose.
Yeah.
I think that's it. You know, people want to give, they want to make a difference. There are so many causes that there are very few causes that I've seen that I don't understand or don't like. So whatever your interest is, the environment, education, the arts, animals, there's something out there to give, and they want to give. So just connect their values with your values and steward them greatly.
So good. Oh, I'm so glad that you're doing the work that you're doing, because I just feel like there is just a lot of, you know, just unknowns when it comes to giving. And I think that the people who do get it, the people who are like, oh my gosh, giving changed everything for our business, it changed everything for our family. You know, when you start to see those things happen, you start to realize that it's like, we are doing them a great favor by inviting them to be a part of something bigger than themselves. Like, who else gets an opportunity to invite people in like our nonprofit leaders do? So really incredible. Yeah. Arlene, it's been so great to have you on the show. And I want just any parting advice that you have for, you know, these nonprofit leaders who may be just getting started, you know, maybe a few years into running their nonprofit or are, you know, seasoned at this. Any parting advice that you have for them as they're fundraising?
You know, I think for not only development people, but for our nonprofit executives or presidents of organizations, really to meet your donors. Meet them. They have a lot to say and a lot to share. And too often, we're leaving it just to development staff and volunteers. But the more you can connect with them, the more they will give.
Mm. Great advice. Everybody wants to know the decision maker, right?
So, yes.
That executive director has a lot of power that they don't realize that they even have. So great advice.
And if they don't know how to ask, they need to bring someone along who can ask, or they need to take some fundraising courses to learn how to ask.
Yeah.
It's really important. If you don't ask, the answer is always no.
Yeah, so true. So Arlene, if somebody wants to pick up a copy of your book, Give to Live, or they want to connect with you, where's the best place for them to do that?
They can get a copy of the book straight through Amazon.com, Give to Live, Make a Charitable Gift You Never Imagined. And they can reach out to me on my website, ArleneKogan.com. And if they'd like to, they can send me an email, and I'm happy to send the last chapter of my book, How to Find and Work with a Financial Advisor, so people can make sure their advisor is on board.
Great.
And another offer I have is the reflection questions in my book are also available for those who don't want to write in the book. I can send them a copy and they can work through those personal reflections on their own on a separate piece of paper.
Okay, great. Is the best way for them to get that by email as well?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'll make sure that your email, your website, and the link to Give to Live are in the show notes. And just such a joy to have you on the show. Thank you for taking the time and for imparting your wisdom on the people that are listening. And of course, like Arlene said, if you guys need fundraising training, you're listening to the right podcast. So yeah. This is the place to get your training. So, reach out if you guys need some additional fundraising training. You know where to find me at marybaloney.com. But love you guys. So appreciate you jumping in and being a part of today's conversation. Let's get out there and let's go change the world one volunteer and $1 at a time.